thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio. On RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying all the songs, along with the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Elton John welcoming you to the Happy Hour with his 1972 hit Rocket Man. Holly and Paulina on the show with you once again. And we have some great music and fantastic interviews today, which will hopefully give you some good suggestions of how to keep happy and look after your well-being.
Yeah, we'll have a deep conversation with Padma Cherian, who will chat about her work volunteering and encouraging blind and partially sighted people to get more active. And of course, it's the first week of July, so we will have your latest sensory immersion with Andy Shipley.
And next up, we will hear how a young woman's love for her pet rats led her to discover a passion for photography. A bit unusual, but there we go. That's coming up after George Michael. Now, time on the Happy Hour to chat passion for photography. David Hogg has more.
Today, we're joined by photographer Rachel Andrews of Soft of Sight Photography to discuss her sight loss journey and her photography. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, first things first, can you tell us a bit about your sight loss?
It's due to myopic macular degeneration, and I have no eyesight in my left eye and no central vision in my right eye. And what I do have is left is kind of impacted by cataracts as well.
And this, I believe, happened in your 20s and you turned to photography. How did you get into that?
Yeah, I sort of lost the sight in one eye in my early 20s and then sort of carried on as normal and then suddenly lost the sight in my other eye, which kind of put a crimp on things, really, to be fair. But I, at the time, was, after about a year, was given a digital camera because at the time I had pet rats and I couldn't see them and I needed to look after them. So we hit upon the idea of if I had a digital camera, I could take pictures of them, blow them up on my computer screen, and then I could see if they had things like abscesses or needed the claws cut or that kind of stuff. So it's basically a purely practical thing to start off with.
And also I can imagine an emotional thing as well, because pet, you're very, very attached to them, obviously, and not being able to see them must be quite difficult.
Yeah, it really did break my heart. And of course, you know, it was typical that they were one of the smallest pets that you can get. So it's not like they're massive, like a big dog or a horse or something. So at the time, it's just rats. So yeah, it helped me stay connected with them, obviously.
And that almost utility need for a camera and then blowing them up has turned into a true passion for the subject. So when did that transition happen into it becoming a real hobby and a passion of yours?
I think it was a sort of couple of years later when I moved to a house that actually had a garden, because at the time I was living in a flat when I experienced sight loss, and I had a garden. I've always liked nature and flowers and stuff, and I kind of thought, oh, I can't really see those flowers. And I thought, well, why don't you take pictures of them? And then discovered that not just from a point of view of this is a flower, I did actually like kind of making artistic shots as well. So that it came out of, you know, the love of flowers in the garden.
If you can't see very well, how logistically do you get into photography? Because obviously it is a very visual medium.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that in real terms that my sight loss happened in the age when digital photography was beginning to become more popular, because if it was film, I'd be bankrupt within a week because my throwaway ratio was very high. So that's the wonderful thing about digital photography, that you can zoom into things not only on the camera but also when you're editing them on a large screen without the technology of things like focus peaking and, you know, cameras where you can set the settings and set it and forget it. I would not be able to do it. So I think that's definitely a bonus for people these days with visual impairments, because film is just, I would find that impossible personally.
You've mentioned there the technology. Also, one of the other benefits is being able to share these photos now, and you share them a lot on both Facebook and Instagram. How have you found the reaction to your photos?
Well, it's interesting because to start off with, although my Instagram and Facebook name is Soft of Sight, I didn't really make so much of a big thing about being severely sight impaired, because I kind of wanted the shots to stand on their own. I did kind of explain it, and obviously when if I've got a picture of my guide dog on there and he's in harness or whatever, it's obvious. So but recently, you know, it's been more obvious that I've been visually impaired, and I think some people think maybe I've got more eyesight than I have, that's quite a compliment, I suppose. And people have been really, really positive and said they've been inspired, so that's really nice to know that you've inspired other people.
For any of our listeners who are out there perhaps struggling with sight loss and they want to get into a hobby, if you get any advice for them, and just how important is it to find something like you've found photography?
I think the idea that when you experience sight loss, or if you're born with sight loss, that you can't be visually creative is quite a stifling thing. And you can, you know, my husband, for example, is completely blind and he is a leather worker. So there are ways around that you can find to do these things. And technology and the internet and being able to connect with other people on social media is a really valuable tool. So even if you think, well, I'd like to do this, but I've got no idea, there will be someone out there that you can connect with on the internet who will have tried it already. So yeah, make use of people and reach out and just say, well, you know, I want to do it, how do I do it? And you'll find a way, there'll be a way.
And finally, just before we run out of time, where can our listeners find your work? We've mentioned your Facebook and Instagram already, so if you want to give them a bit of a shout out.
Basically, it's on Facebook, I'm just called Soft of Sight Photography, and on Instagram, I'm also called Soft of Sight Photography, just for the keeping it the same. So if not, I'll forget what I'm doing. So yeah.
So Rachel Andrews of Soft of Sight Photography, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, David. Now, Paulina, Rachel spoke there about her love of photography, and this is something that always crosses my mind, because as you know, I use photography on my blog, but these are images that my family actually take for me because I don't have any vision to basically take pictures. And I always think if I could see or have some useful vision, I think photography would be one of the things that I'm most interested in. But do you have an interest in photography, or are you a person to take photos, or is it kind of, yeah, does it vary between sighted people?
I think it would vary. Also, you know what, when I look at my partner, for example, he's not the best with taking pictures. But then again, I studied media and we did a little bit of photography when I was studying it. So I'll always be the person that's like crouching down, trying to get a weird angle, you know, looking up from the ground and, you know, trying to get those really like interesting shots. And you know what, I say that they're usually not that great. But I'm always playing around with it. So I don't know. I think it depends on people. I don't think everyone, you kind of have to have some like creative drive for it, or just be willing to look like an absolute ninny in funny positions.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those things that you either possibly really like or you're not keen at all. I mean, I never used to like my photo being taken when I was younger, but I think I've just got used to it the more I've done blogging and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think you definitely have to have a creative outlet, or maybe there's some other creative outlets that incorporate photography that, you know, people are generally interested in. So I think it's really interesting, the concept of vision impairment and photography. It always does fascinate me. And I love as well how she's adapted photography to work for her vision impairment. So, you know, the whole reason she started taking the pictures was to see her pets. And I just love how she's adapted that.
Yeah, that's actually something that came. I've spoken with a few interviews for RNIB Connect Radio with photographers, and this is the thing they said with like residual vision, being able to blow up your picture on a big screen when they have like a Mac or a big computer at home. That's what they'll do. Even for like, there's a guy that does wonderful photography of the night sky. And he said being able to do the big screen, being able to have like a big camera that he can hook up to his laptop just for taking pictures just makes it so much easier to kind of get the right angle and figure out what he really wants, and then being able to like enjoy it afterwards.
Yeah, it's so good. I just love how you can take a picture of something and then just make it accessible and have that enjoyment from doing something that works for you and adapting it in your own way. I just love it.
Is that something like you get asked a lot? Because obviously you have the blog, and I feel like something that comes up a fair bit is like, oh, why are you bothering with pictures if you can't see them? Or how are you liking this post that's a picture? Like, people seem to be really unaware half the time.
Do you get asked that quite a lot? So people often say to me, what's the point of you including pictures in your blog posts if you can't read them? Or how do you use social media because it's so visual and it's all image based? And the thing to remember here is image descriptions. So I and other screen reader users listening know that having image descriptions is basically vital for us, because without that, we wouldn't have any clue what an image is. It just read a load of random numbers or graphic or just something really random. And so the key is in the image descriptions. And I think as well, that just opens up the visual world to blind and partially sighted people, which, yeah, is so important.
And you can get creative with a description as well, make it really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I do love a good, fun image description.
So, Holly, I have a really fun photography fact, but I'm going to save that for later.
All right. Excited for that one. Still to come on today's Happy Hour, we'll have this month's mindfulness exercise to help us connect with the natural world. And shortly, Paulina will be speaking with one lady that wants to encourage more people to get physically active.
I haven't ever really found a place that I call home. I never stick around quite long enough to make it. I apologize once again, I'm not in love. But it's not as if I mind that your heart ain't exactly breaking. It's just a thought, only a thought. But if my life is for rent.
Now, we often talk about the benefits of sport and physical activity. By participating, we can not only boost our physical health, but also our mental well-being. So joining me today to spread the message of the importance of physical exercise and good health is RNIB volunteer Padma Cherian. It is great speaking with you again, Padma.
Thank you.
Now, I have to say, looking at your, I guess, exercise resume, most people tend to pick one physical activity or maybe even two and stick to it. But over the years, you were involved in quite a few groups, and that includes, I think, Tai Chi, yoga, running, and even ballroom dancing. That's a lot.
Dancing, yes. You know, it's all these activities I personally enjoy. And I always believed all my life that to feel well, to maintain mental health, it is very important to have and to enjoy physical activities. Because really, it is not just going to the gym, and to me it is boring. But physical activities can be enjoyable too. When you feel a bit down, go for a long walk in the woods and all the listen to the birds and the leaves rustling. It lifts the spirit. When I first lost my sight, I wanted some activity, and with the local charity supporting the visually impaired, I started the walking group that was back in 1997, and it is still going 25 years old this year, and it makes me proud that the walking group is doing so well. I don't run it anymore. I have handed it over to some more efficient, because the group is getting larger and larger. It's no longer possible for me. So I thought I would try and initiate something different. And I have been attending Tai Chi classes for a long time. And I asked my teacher, would she like to teach visually impaired people? And she readily agreed. So that's how the Tai Chi group started. And then I enjoy ballroom dancing. I asked one of my friends if he knew any classes, teacher who is willing to teach visually impaired people. And she said she knew somebody. And fortunately, I found a great teacher, and she gave us a huge concession in fees. And we had a ballroom dancing class, and we had some sighted helpers to help us lead to the floor. And it gave me a great thrill, really, to see everybody, visually impaired people who don't usually go out very much, go out to the house, enjoying themselves, dancing to lovely music. It was great. And the same with yoga. I used to have an RNIB volunteer coming to help me with computer problems. And he was away for quite a while. I asked him, had he been on a long holiday? He said, no, he was doing a yoga teacher training course. I said, would you teach yoga to us, visually impaired? And he agreed. That's how the yoga group started.
Wow. So you didn't, it sounds a little bit like you had your fingers in all the pies and decided to do so many things.
And I enjoyed myself.
So was it your first time trying ballroom dancing? Have you done any dancing prior to that?
I have never done any dancing before, but I used to enjoy country dancing and line dancing when I was sighted. But once I lost my sight, that was not possible. You see, but with ballroom dancing, the advantage is a sighted helper helps me with the steps, and that's how I can enjoy ballroom dancing. I don't have much sight, so it is this country dancing is not possible for me. It's not an option.
Now, I'm a bit curious because obviously you're talking a lot about how, well, through all of these groups, you were encouraging other members of the vision impaired community to pick up exercise. And do you find it's hard for people to get out of this slump, I guess, if they're not being active and their energy levels are low? And it's almost like a vicious cycle when you don't when you're not feeling well, you don't exercise, but then you don't exercise and you don't feel well, and it just goes on and on. How do we break that cycle?
It is very, very true. It needs a great deal of persuasion to persuade members that, especially Tai Chi, it is such a slow, easy exercise. And within a few months, one can notice the benefits those exercises give. Because it is not like going to gym and hard work. It is very slow movement. And members found, those who were reluctant to join, they joined and they found and enjoyed it, and they found the benefits of it. But they do need person. That's why I always tell my local charity supporting us. You see, they need grassroots workers, volunteers, to have a relation with the members, to talk to them and persuade them. And the same with my technology group, which I started. You see, people who have never used technological devices, digital devices, it is very difficult to persuade them to use and try and be independent.
It can seem quite intimidating.
It is. So that's why they need to be persuaded. And sadly, our local charity don't believe in that. They think they can do everything from the headquarters. It is not true. It is not true at all. They need grassroots level workers, volunteers, to talk to people and establish a relationship, in the sense that to persuade them and to show them how important it is to be independent using digital devices. And it is not difficult to do the basic things. Everybody can do, in my opinion. But people feel intimidated, like you said, especially the older people.
I guess another thing that comes through groups like Tai Chi, yoga, running, is you're getting a sense of community, because sometimes after getting that initial sightless diagnosis, many people feel quite lonely.
Exactly. You see, there is a social aspect to all these groups. Apart from physical activity, there is a mixing with other visually impaired people. It is in itself a great source of boost to mental health, really, in my opinion.
What would you say to anyone who's maybe listening to us having this conversation right now to encourage them to, I guess, get up and just get that ball rolling and not overthink it?
I would say don't be intimidated. You don't know until you try what you can do. So giving a try is important. But sadly, it is not easy to find the classes for the visually impaired. I have had that experience, you see. I used to try and join yoga classes, but the reason I started a class for the yoga class for the visually impaired, because whichever class I tried to join for the sighted people, they used to say, oh, if you can't see, you can't cope with yoga. That is not true. We proved them wrong.
Because it's just a matter of how it's being thought. As long as you're being quite descriptive, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do yoga. I mean, you don't need sight for it. It seems a bit silly, doesn't it?
I think the reason being, most teachers, they don't understand visual impairment. And we need to make them aware. Awareness is very important, that what visual impairment is and what really impaired people can do.
So what do you think we can do better as a society to increase this awareness and make people a little bit less nervous about working with someone who is visually impaired, or someone who is visually impaired to be less nervous about trying a new sport?
You just look around the country, how many charities supporting the visually impaired have activities for physical activities? Not many. I don't know any charity supporting the visually impaired having Tai Chi classes and ballroom dancing classes. Because one of my friends in London, she was saying, why don't you start a dancing class in London? We don't have any for the visually impaired. And that is in London.
So quite a big city with a lot of community. Do you
exactly?
Do you think it comes through maybe not people not really knowing who to reach out for around this?
Exactly, and finding the teachers willing to teach visually impaired is also not easy at all. I was very fortunate. We found a teacher who understood visual impairment because she said her mother was blind. You see, it was just sheer luck, I would say. And she gave us such a huge concession in fees. Otherwise, it would be unaffordable for a visually impaired. But she gave us a good concession.
Because that's the thing. Having sport be a bit more accessible when it comes to the finances can really help boost the number of people that actually try it as well.
And also, you see, in large cities, I mean, Milton Keynes is not as large, of course, not as large as London, but even in Milton Keynes, it is very difficult to find an accessible venue suitable for our activities. That is another problem we have. And I have been having an ongoing fight with our council, local council, to provide an accessible venue, which is in the city center or, you know, accessible location. Otherwise, how can they promote good health?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we want people to feel better and we want everyone to have a good life. And
exactly.
If we're not making things accessible and available, we're making it more difficult. And that's not really the way to go, is it?
Fortunately, the younger generation, you see, my generation need a great deal of persuasion to take up physical activity. But the younger people, there is more awareness now. And I think we should take advantage of that awareness and introduce classes.
What would you like to see change over the next few years?
I would love to see awareness even among the charities, various charities supporting the visually impaired. Even among them, you see, I had such a fight to start a walking group 25 years ago. It was a fight. And recently, I had some disagreement with our local charity and I resigned as a volunteer. A group I was running very successfully for the last few years, they gave my group to somebody else to run without telling me. And that was a blow. I resigned straight away and I miss running my groups now. But, I'll do something else.
Do you have any plans in mind for the next group, or is that something still in progress?
Well, I would have I have lots of plans, but without support, it is not possible for me to start something on my own.
So it's not an easy task for you.
No, it is. I feel very bad about it, really. But I hope something will sort out. You see, our the local charities, they don't realize they need volunteers at a local level to persuade people to join these activities. They think they can do everything from Aylesbury, which is not right. They are wrong there. But they want to run everything from Aylesbury, which is not possible.
Well, let's try and end on a positive note, Padma. What, like, looking back at years of activity and everything you've tried, what is, I guess, your most memorable and fondest memory you have from that time?
Oh, yes. I very much enjoyed running all my four groups. That was the best thing I have done for a very long time. I really enjoyed running the groups.
Well, Padma, thank you so much for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
You are very welcome.
I'm riding in your car. You turn on the radio. You're
pulling. Pointer Sisters with their 1978 hit Fire on today's Happy Hour with Holly and Paulina. And now it's time to hear Paulina's fun photography fact, which she promised.
Yes, I did indeed promise it, and I have it here for you. It's a surprise. So are you ready?
I am ready. Hit me with it.
So apparently, cat photos go back much further than we would think. They're going beyond Facebook, beyond Instagram, beyond those old 80s photography sessions with your cat, because apparently the cat photography origins reach all the way down to the 19th century, where the viral trend was born in 1870s when Harry Pointer took a photo of his cat and started it all. He's the man we can thank for the modern cat photo.
I mean, I am very grateful for Harry. Did not know who he was until about 10 seconds ago when you said that, but I'm very grateful for Harry. That is just incredible, though, how it links back to that day. I never would have even thought cameras would have been around then. I mean, I don't know what year cameras are invented, and I don't know much about the history, but yeah, that's just incredible.
Can we appreciate that there was one man there that, you know, this amazing invention came around, and he's like, yes, but what if I took a picture of my favorite cat?
Yeah, and out of everything he could have taken a picture of, he thought, you know what? My cat's cute. I'm going to take a picture of it.
Oh my God, do you think he wanted to share it with his friends and family?
Maybe. Yeah.
It's like the modern day phone, you know, how you have so many pictures of your cats and then you catch up with your friends and you're like, hey, look, here's my cat, here's my dog, here's my pet.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have a catch up with a pet photo, haven't you? I wonder if he did that and they were just as mesmerized, maybe. I wonder what their reaction was when maybe they hadn't seen a cat photo before and then he showed them it for the first time.
And they were like, I want one.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. And then maybe he made loads of money from it. Who knows?
I mean, I wonder if the cat was doing anything, because you know how cats are usually just asleep, or your pet's just asleep and that's the thing you're always showing. They're like, they're doing absolutely nothing. And everyone's like, oh my God, they're so cute.
Yeah, they could just be sitting there and then he's just like, you're so adorable. I mean, you know, we wouldn't necessarily think that about ourselves, but
yeah,
it's a cat or a dog, and a pet's just cute when they're doing
absolutely nothing,
sleeping or relaxing.
Oh, the life of a pet. Now, remember, if you would like to share a fun fact, an interesting fact, or just a bizarre fact, you can email us. Holly, our email address is
radio@rnib.org.uk. Or maybe you've got some cute pictures of your pets to share with us. And don't forget to include those image descriptions as we previously discussed.
Absolutely.
Now, we are slowly nearing the end of today's show. But before that, every month we catch up with Andy from Natural Inclusion, who helps us take a moment to relax and reconnect with the natural world. So without further ado, here's this month's sensory immersion on Andy's Sensory Odyssey.
Hi, it's Andy Shipley here from Natural Inclusion. This is our guided exercise for July, tuning into the landscape around you. For our ancient ancestors, being conscious of the landscape around you, changing rhythms, the scent of deer in the air, could indicate the presence of prey or flurry in the undergrowth, but also indicate the presence of a predator. When I place my awareness on the wider sensory landscape, notice the ebb and flow of bird song or the sound of the wind in the trees and kaleidoscope of smells, it just helps me feel more connected with the natural world. The thing to work on when you're doing this is to try and notice everything equally and avoid your attention being dominated by one particular sound or scent or sensation. In effect, disappearing yourself and allowing everything in equally.
Welcome to day 5 of my 14-day sensory odyssey, widening your awareness of the land around you. So once again, having found your spot, close your eyes, allowing your weight to sink towards the ground. Now allow your attention to flow down through your body, imagining roots sprouting through the soles of your feet into the earth and extending into the network of roots and fungal threads that are interlaced just beneath the surface. Notice the connection you feel held in place. Part of the land and the wide round earth. Now expand your attention to approximately 50 meters in all directions, around, above and below. Notice any scents or aromas that are wafting on the breeze. Notice the sounds you hear emanating from the ground, from around you, or above you. Notice any vibrations you might feel coming through the ground. Now bring your attention back to your roots, still connecting you to the earth beneath your feet. In your own time, unravel them from the network of roots and fungal threads and withdraw them back into your feet. Now slowly open your eyes. Do this exercise as many times as you like. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that process of immersing in the sensescape. I'd recommend practicing it as regularly as possible, and you'll notice the more you do it, the more attuned and aware you'll become to what's going on around you. As usual, there'll be a sensory reflections session on the last Thursday of this month, which will be the 28th of July. And if you want to find out more about my work and me, do that by going to www.natural-inclusion.org. Until the next time, stay sensational.
And that is us for today's happy hour. Thank you for keeping Paulina and I company. Remember, if you'd like to share a random story with us, a happy fact, or maybe just talk about your passion, you can always get in touch.
Yeah, you can get in touch via our email. Once again, it's radio@rnib.org.uk.
That's also where you can send in your music therapy choices for our last track of the show.
Remember, it needs to be a song that carries a lot of meaning to you.
So, quite simple. Now, today's music therapy moment is presented by Padma, who returns to close off today's show. Thanks again for listening. And remember, you can catch up with all of the Happy Hour episodes over on our podcast. Just search for RNIB Happy Hour, wherever you get your podcast from.
Hello, I'm Padma Charyan, and I would like to suggest a song that has been a great source of inspiration for me, and that is Cat Stevens singing The Morning Has Broken. Like the first
bird. You are listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed-down version of our hour-long show. If you've enjoyed the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, thank you for listening to the Happy Hour podcast.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.